Hey, what's happening, guys? It's Ezra here at Moto 247, and welcome to episode 25 of the Moto 247 show. Today's guest was Chris Howell, and we talked about the outdoors, what's going on with his racing right now, and a few other things today. And it was definitely a good episode, and I'm really looking forward to getting this out, and not only getting this one out, but having these come out consistently each week. And that was the problem we were having for the longest time, pretty much ever since we got it going. And we actually had it going good for the first few episodes that we had here, but the thing was, just we would get a couple episodes out, then just, you know, have like a 2 month break or something. So I'm really looking forward to and planning on having an episode that is out pretty much every week. So I guess stay tuned every week for our episodes, and we need to get a day locked down that we have it on. But as of right now, just scheduling with guests and everything going on, it's kind of all over the place. But I don't know, I kind of want to get it going earlier on in the week. But anyways, we got that. Really pumped on that. And also, stay tuned for our YouTube. And I think I announced this before, but once we hit 1K subscribers, we are giving away a custom set of Prism Designs graphics. And if you guys don't know already, Prism Designs absolutely kills it on the graphic game there. And once we hit 1K, we're going to give away a custom set to one lucky subscriber. And we're a little ways away from that 1K right now, but hopefully we hit that. And also really looking forward to getting our YouTube going. We have a lot of videos on YouTube, but it's mostly from my gaming on the Supercross games over the years. But we're really getting that going with multiple things going on, including our podcast clips, which I still plan on uploading a couple from Joey's episode, and then a few here from Chris's episode, and getting some clips of the podcast up on YouTube. And hopefully it's not too long before we get video footage of the podcast too. So I guess just stay tuned each week for our new podcast. And we got all of our updates on our Instagram at the Moto247 show. Got that. Subscribe to our YouTube. Definitely appreciate it if you did that. And anyways, thank you guys so much for tuning in here. And let's go. If you guys are looking to get graphics for your bike, your snowmobile, or even get a helmet wrap, I highly recommend you guys check out Prism Designs. Aaron at Prism does an amazing job. The graphics look so sick, and not only do they look really cool, the quality of those graphics are top-notch too. And I have a set on my pit bike, and man, they look cool. I have that Geico theme going on, and rest in peace, Geico Honda. Anyways, have that going, and it looks sick, but not only that, but the quality of them is really great. And that's something I was really pumped on, actually, because there's a lot of companies out there that the graphics look really cool, really clean. You know, you can post your picture on Instagram and the bike looks so sick, but you have a weekend on the bike of doing a couple motos and they're starting to peel and everything, and that's just really frustrating. And that's the complete opposite with Prism. The quality of them is really great, and they're at an affordable price too. So I highly recommend you guys check out Prism Designs. You can find them on Instagram at PrismDesigns_company. And then the link to their website is right there in their bio. So definitely recommend you check out Prism. Okay, so episode 25 of the Moto247 show, here with Chris Howell. What's up, man?
Not much. How are you?
Doing pretty good. So what did you think about Unadilla? I think that track was, I don't know how you would describe it. It seemed kind of weird. It just seemed like it separated a lot of the guys away from the other routes, like rocks and just pulled away. And the 250 class is a little bit different, but I guess we really dive into the 250s first.
Yeah, no, the track definitely was gnarly. I think it definitely showed someone that could pick some good lines and really like tear apart the track and make sure like pick good lines and be able to carry momentum. Like the people that just like pinned it and tried to just override the track, like say like a Tomac or someone like that, didn't seem to do too well. But someone that was smoother and more technical and had better line selection did tend to do a lot better, like Roxon.
Yeah, I'm just surprised in how like far it actually separated the guys. Like, for example, in the 250s, Cooper did really good, won the first moto. Jet pressured him for a long time there, and I think he lost by like 3 seconds. So he was right there. Then in the second moto, you know, Jet just goes past, I think it was Martin, then Cooper. I forgot what the order was, but both the star guys. And, got the win there. And Cooper, I think he fell over like a minute back. Like he was down quite a ways from Jet there. I was just wondering,
like, was he playing it smart, you know? Like, what do you think on that? Because, like, was he just trying not to override the track, kind of play it safe with the third place? Or did he get third or fourth?
I think he got fourth.
Yeah, a fourth play. That's what I was wondering. I'm like, is he playing it safe? Or because in the first moto, like, he was on it and looking really good, kind of like everyone predicted with it being a home race for him.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Like, I know, like, I don't think he was playing it safe just because, like, the points are still fairly tight. Like, he's only, like, four up or something like that right now. So it's not really time to play it safe with being the points so close. But honestly, though, like, that second moto, Lawrence was – he was ripping. Like, he railed around the outside of – first he railed right outside of Cooper, I believe, in that big sweeper corner before the big tabletop. And then he passed Martin in the same spot, I believe. So, like, that corner speed he had there was amazing. So I think he was just on it.
Yeah, he looked really good. And, yeah, I think it was the same corner both times. It was, like, just absolutely railing it. And,
yeah.
I was thinking about Cooper. I'm like, he can't be playing it safe because, there's still four more rounds after this. So,
yeah.
You know, with Jet being right there, I just found it kind of crazy, though. But it was so weird how the racing played out. Like, I feel like, just in my own opinion, that the racing wasn't that entertaining as a fan, I should say. Just watching it. Because it seemed like the battles, like, weren't too intense like they have been all year. Heck, in both classes, really. Like, they were close for sure.
No, I agree with you there for sure. I think that track was probably one of the ruddiest that we've had so far this year, in my opinion. It definitely looked, at least watching on TV, it looked ruddier than the rest of the tracks that we've had. And from a racer standpoint, I think it's harder to race somebody when the track gets that ruddy because, like, you kind of land in a rut and you have to follow the rut. It's harder to dive in inside of somebody or change your line. So I don't think the track promoted as close of racing as we could have, and that's why I think the thing was it was kind of a little bit boring as a fan.
Yeah, I think a lot of people didn't even realize how bad it actually was, or just how gnarly it was, I should say. I watched it on TV. Unfortunately, I couldn't go, but just seeing the stuff on TV, it looked gnarly, but I just know from, you know, going to the tracks over the years just how much more crazy it is. And I was listening to, I don't know if it was Pulp or whatever, someone that went, and he was saying, like, no, man, it was a lot crazier than I looked on TV. And from what I saw, it was just, like, the riders were locked into the ruts. You know, they couldn't really move around too much, and it just seemed this craziness, even though the racing wasn't too, I guess, entertaining for us, but... yeah, it just seemed really difficult, and I wanted to look up the times because I heard that they were talking about, or Paul, Steve, and someone else was talking about Cody Shock, and that was David Berman, and he was 5 seconds off of Ken Roxon there, and yeah, I think Cody got like 10th, I believe. So
yeah, that was a good ride by him for sure.
Yeah, and they're talking about it was him or Dylan Schwartz. They're talking about, like, the up-and-coming guys that deserve a factory ride. But, yeah, Cody, like, ever since he moved to the 450, he's been really on it and stuff and got top 10 there against a lot of good guys. And even though I think they said, like, four guys are out, four factory guys, that is, that are out right now with injuries, like AC, Osborne, and a couple other guys. But still, just to be up there with those guys and about 5 seconds, I was really curious. I wish I would have looked that up earlier. To see what the distance was, like, in the previous races, you know, like, from first to 10th, and see if it was that big. I feel like that's a, you know, I think that was his fastest lap, but I feel like that's just a huge difference. When it comes to the racing times, you know, 5 seconds is huge.
Yeah, for sure. There's definitely a pretty big gap there, but it just kind of shows, like, how good guys like Ken Roczen are. Like, it's pretty amazing, especially when you watch him ride, because he makes it look so effortless. And it's pretty intense, because I watch him and it's like, man, how's this guy going that fast? Because he doesn't look like he's going that fast. He's just super smooth and carries really good momentum, and it's pretty amazing to watch him ride for sure.
Yeah, I bet it probably kills a lot of the guys out there, like, seeing him and make it look so easy, look so nice, and then they go out there and just, they're absolutely giving it everything they have and be off. Like, talking about the Packers guys or even like the private and to see how far they're off, and it's like I'm absolutely on rails right now. I don't know what else I could do better, you know. Like, blowing, standing up in the corners, looking like not even. And that's why I think a lot of people take him for granted too. And I know he has his own things with his injuries over the years, and people are talking crap about him. But just with him, I don't know how he's been lately. You know, so hot and cold. But even when he does do good, I don't think people really appreciate or like recognize how fast he's actually going, because the dude's, you know, insane.
Yeah, for sure. He definitely makes it look easy, and I can tell you from experience that it's way harder than that. It irritates me watching him look. It's like, man, it looks so easy. I could just do that, and I tried, and it doesn't work out.
Yeah. I think all you guys are insane, and just I don't, you know, just to see, like, you guys race and compare it to, like, just even, like, a B or A-class rider. It's like, they think they're going fast, and then you see the privateers, then they see the, like, top factory guys. It's like, oh, my God. And, like, I'm in the mountain bike racing, and, like, here I think I'm just absolutely going as fast as I can. I'm hauling, and I look at video, and I'm like, man, it's not fast. And I'm, like, it's, you know, sort of fast. And then I see, like, a clip of a pro dude. I'm like, oh, my God, this is crazy. It's, like, can't even find, you know, like, areas to make up time. Like, it has to be. Like, how is the outdoor track, well, I guess super fast too, like, just trying to find, like, just a little, like, hundreds of seconds to improve your times, the qualifying times?
Yeah, it's tough because, like, every time you go out there, you're definitely trying to go as fast as you can. So it's hard when you're going as fast as you can, you have to go find a half a second or a second. And it's just trying to just try to carry more momentum through the corners and through the rhythm sections and all that stuff. So it's not too bad if you, like, just say in Supercross, you have a rhythm you haven't hit yet, and you're down by, like, a half a second, and, like, most of the time, it's like, oh, because I didn't hit that 3-3-3 out of the corner or whatnot. But if you're doing all the rhythms and blitzing the whoops pretty good, and you're still a half a second down, then it's really tough to try to carry a momentum to try to find that time.
Yeah, and I don't think people realize that at all. Like, I've seen a lot of fans talk on Instagram. Of course, I always have to go through and look at the comments and everything, but just to see someone, like, let's say a half a second, like, that's huge, and just, like, the things you have to, like, the, I guess, improve on, it's insane. It's, like, really, really nitpicking stuff if it's Supercross or Motocross, and I actually have Unadilla up here on my TV right now, and just some of the lines that Kenny has taken, and it shows the other guys, like, it showed, I think Slavacki a second ago, and just see how much faster his time was, because Slavacki, it looked like he was absolutely hauling. I don't know what he could have done faster. But getting back to Unadilla, what did you think about Dylan's ride? It seemed to be like an off weekend for him, which is crazy to believe, because what he went 2-3 on the weekend, which is pretty crazy considering all the guys up there and how stacked the field is.
Yeah, no, honestly, though, like, Dylan's been super impressive this whole season. Like, he surprised me, that's for sure. And, like, especially, like you said, kind of being a little bit of an off weekend, he really didn't have anything for 10. He still killed it and ended up with second overall going 2-3. And that's how you win a championship. And if you're still second overall or third overall on your bad days and you're winning on your good days, you're going to have the number one plate up into the season.
Yeah, it's just we're talking last week of just how crazy it is to find we're talking about how crazy the 450 class was and how inconsistent everyone is. And I think we mentioned, like, Dylan's worst finish was, like, a fourth or was it a fifth? Like, it was, I think, fifth at the worst. And to see Tomac, we all know how fast Tomac is and what he's capable of and all the championships he's won, but just to see him get, like, let's say, like, 11th place start, like he's has been getting the last few years. And, like, it seems like every year it's just harder and harder to come back from the pack there. And it's just insane how fast everyone is up front. And it just seems like it's so much harder to be consistent, I should say. When you're looking back at 5, 10, 15 years ago, just how different the field was. It seemed like there wasn't a lot of top guys. And we even talked about this like a few episodes ago, last year, I remember. Like, we're comparing the guy that, like, in Supercross, let's say 15th to 20th place in Supercross, comparing it to, like, let's say someone inside the top 10 back in, like, 05. Like, just how fast they are, and just to make a main event in Supercross, or they, you know, score points in the outdoors, and just how crazy it is, and how fast you guys are going.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely, the progression of the sport has been really pretty gnarly in the last 20 years. Like you said, like, a few years ago when Tomac would get a bad start, he'd just make his way to the front pretty much every moto, especially outdoors. And then, like, at Washougal, he got a not too bad of a start in the second moto, but, I mean, he was going fast, and he was actually starting to look kind of like the old Tomac, in my opinion, at the second moto Washougal, and still wasn't enough to get around Ferrandis. So, like, just that there alone shows how much faster that all the guys at the top are going.
Yeah, it seems like they all kind of picked up their game, and everyone's trying to see if Tomac is off, or if it's the issue is him, or if everyone up their game and they're faster this year. And I don't know if it's a little bit of both, or I know definitely they're faster for sure. And hearing, I think it was like Ryan Hughes talking about just how everyone, like, of course everyone's working out really hard and are in really good shape, but just the technique everyone has and just improving their form on the bike and just like the little things that are making them faster. And yeah, to see guys like Tomac that really aren't able to catch up from 11th, when a couple of years ago he'd be up there with plenty of time to spare and even maybe, well, probably even pull out a lead on second place.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely think everyone's just getting better and getting fitter too, because that's one thing that Tomac really had over everyone else, in my opinion, especially outdoors, is the end of the last 10 minutes of the moto, he definitely, like, would be going faster everyone else, because everyone else is getting tired. But now, like, Ferrandis is just as gnarly at the end of the moto. He's not getting tired as well. So, like, if you have more guys as fit as you, like, you definitely have to start up front. Like, that's just plain and simple, you know?
Yeah. Like, I don't get how Ferrandis does it. I went to Red Bud, and I think he was outside the top five, and I'm not sure exactly who was in the top five. I know it was, like, all the top guys. Like, Tomac was up there, and Roczen was up there, and I believe AC. Must have been, like, the first moto, but at least one of the motos, he got outside the top five, and all the top five guys, or the top guys were up in the top five there. And I'm like, there's no way he's making it up at the first, you know? And yeah, I don't know what he can do. These guys are absolutely hauling. And then sure enough, you know, he made it up there and just made it look like nothing, really. And, like, I don't know. Like, I think we all knew how fast Dylan is. We all see the speed over – or speed from him over the years. But just to see him in his rookie year in the 450, just be this dominant, it's crazy. Like, I know he's 26, but still, like, he's absolutely hauling and making it look easy, like, late in the motos. It doesn't look like he's tired, really. And I just find it crazy.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I don't think anyone really expected it, because Ferrandis wasn't capable, I don't think. But I think it was between him being a rookie and the unknown of how that Star Racing would do with the 450 program. And, I mean, it's not a secret that Factory Yamaha struggled with that bike. So everyone kind of, I don't think, was expecting the bike to be as good as it is, and that team to really put together as good of a 450 as they looks like they have. Like, it looks like this bike really works well. It's fast. It handles well. And I got to give some credit to the Star Racing team for really turning that team around, you know, because Factory Yamaha couldn't quite get it figured out, but they seem to got the 450 figured out. It's not only Ferrandis as well. Like, you have Plessinger that's killing it on the bike now, and then you have Craig that's actually doing well too. He's a top 8 guy as well. So you have three other guys up in the top 10, and it's pretty impressive for a team, especially when they took a bike that no one really wanted to ride. So I gotta give it up to them. It's very impressive what they've done.
Yeah, it's crazy, like, just how polar opposite it was. Like, the last couple of years talking, or everyone online talking about how shitty the Yamaha 450 was. And then, yeah, that flip, how it flipped this year, the how dominant they are. And the whole team, 250, well, heck, even the amateurs are killing it. Amateurs, 250 and 450 are doing really good. But, yeah, I was always curious to see how the Yamaha 450 was, because I heard good things about it. The production bike, and I was always found it really hard to believe that it was actually that bad for the factory team. But I know they're all doing their own things, and also I don't know how in the heck they shaved 8 pounds. It was like 7 or 8 pounds they shaved off the bike this year. But yeah, it's crazy to think that just how far they've come though, because the bike hasn't changed over the last year too.
Yeah, no, for sure. They definitely did some stuff, and like the whole team's killing it, like 250F, amateurs, all of them. So Bobby Reagan definitely has some secrets over there that he's not going to let anyone know. But yeah, they definitely turned that bike around, and like you said, they shaved like 8 pounds off, I believe that's what I heard. And it's quite a bit, especially going from a factory 450 and then shaving 8 pounds off. Like, I don't know how they did it. All I can think is maybe they're running air fork. And factory team is running spring fork, but still, that's only like 2 or 3 pounds. They still had 5 more to go if that's the case. But yeah, what I would give to be a fly on the wall there, because they definitely have some secrets going on in that team that's obviously been working well.
Yeah, it's like they really got it going on, and I think they took over pro circuits like. Just as the dominant team, as kind of Mitch's team, kind of like, I don't know, it seems like the last couple of years they've been off, and Stars really stepped up, and it's really cool to see what they're doing in the 450 class. Like what you said, you know, it's kind of questionable coming in with a new team, or the, you know, Star moving up in the 450 and kind of getting that going this year. And I was really wondering how Ferrandis was going to do and Plessinger. Because he was really good in the 250, and he's a bigger guy too, so you'd think he'd be really good on the 450. And then he comes up, and then the last couple of years have been pretty rough for him. But yeah, this year, like Supercross, he looked really good, and I think he like kept on getting better throughout the season. And then the outdoors, he's absolutely been killing it. Besides the incident and at Unadilla, it's kind of crazy there. But yeah, it's crazy to see what Star has done over the last year. And. And yeah, what or when was your last year on Yamaha? Weren't you on Yamaha like a couple years ago?
Yeah, I rode Yamahas in 2015 was my last year. Then 2016, I got on Huskies.
Oh, I thought it was a little bit later than that. Yeah. Just getting back to Star. Yeah, it's crazy to think what they're doing, and yeah, and we're talking last week about. AP going to KTM. Like, I'm not sure if he wants to do that now. You know, it seems like Rebel KTM is like a opportunity of a lifetime, but like, I don't know what they have going on at Star, but it seems to be working for everyone on that team, basically.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Like you said, like Mitch's team used to be kind of the powerhouse and everyone wanted to go there, but now, last couple of years now, especially after the 450 team's been picked up by them, Star definitely looks like the team that everyone wants to be on. Like you said, with Plessinger possibly going to KTM, like, that's definitely a question, because he's definitely turned his results around this year, and I think it has to do a lot with the bike getting better with the team. That kind of is kind of what it looks like from the outside looking in. But so it'd be interesting if what he does end up doing. He really killed it this year. Like, in Supercross, he started doing well, and I think he would have won, I think, like, Atlanta 2 if he didn't have that little tip over, because he was gapping everybody. And then even this last weekend at Unadilla, like, he was pressuring Ken, and they had a pretty big lead. Like, it would have been interesting to see how that would have unfolded if he didn't, you know, loop out by the finish line. But he's actually very impressive. I think I don't think he gets quite enough credit for how much he turned it around this year, because, like you said, the last couple of years on the 450 really were not impressive at all. But this year he's really turned it around, and it's been pretty cool to see, because I think AP is one of the one of the guys that are pretty cool in the class and likes to have fun and have a good time and not so serious. So I think it's good to see him. I think I've heard good things about him. I don't really know him personally, but I've heard he's a great person, so it's cool to see him do well.
How do you think, if he does go to Alden Baker, just how that would work out with his personality, with him being so laid back and a fun guy and going to a program like Alden's? Like, I know he's probably working his ass off during the week, working out and putting in his motos, but just to kind of go over and, you know, change the scenery there.
It's kind of hard to say. Like I said, I don't know him personally, but I don't think he would have an issue. I think he likes to have a good time and whatnot, but I think he also knows to put in the work and how to put the work in when needed. So I think he's eager. If he does go that route, I think he's eager to learn Alden's program and make the best of it, because I think he wants to be a champion. I think he believes he has what he has and or has what it takes to do it. And I think if he goes that route, he's going to put in the work and get it done. I think in Supercross, as of lately, that team's still probably the best team and bike in for Supercross. Like, I mean, the results don't lie. They seem to be struggling a little bit outdoors, and I'm not exactly sure how come, because in years past they've done really well outdoors. But I think either way, if AP stays on Yamaha or goes to KTM, he's going to be a threat next year. I think Alden will have a good program, and I think he'll adapt to it pretty well if he does go that route.
Yeah, that's. I was wondering with the KTM, like, what's going on? Because Cooper was, like, he never really was that, not necessarily bad is the word. I think everyone's saying how bad he's doing, but he's still up there in the top 10, top 5. And that's, like we mentioned earlier, and just to be up there is insane how fast these guys are going. All of them are going, like, insanely fast. But just to see how dominant he was in Supercross, then you go and come in the outdoors and, for example, Unadilla, one of the motos there, you see Roxton, and I think it was like the first lap, just went past him and kind of dropped him. Where in Supercross, if we saw that, like, Cooper would be right there, and then he would probably eventually, you know, get around him and gap him, or at least, you know, get around him for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely surprising. I don't know what's going on. I don't know, honestly. Like they definitely have a good setup and good program for Supercross, but as of 2021 outdoors, none of the riders have really been up there. I mean, Moosecan got third overall this weekend, but the beginning of the season, like, they weren't up here at all. So I don't know if they put so much emphasis in making a good bike setup program for Supercross that they kind of put the effort in outdoors. They're trying, don't get me wrong, like, I think they're putting effort in, but I don't know if they just focus so hard on Supercross that outdoors kind of got put on the back burner and they weren't as preparative as they want, or if they made so many changes to make the bike that much better in Supercross that didn't quite pan out outdoors, if that makes sense. I don't know what's going on, but there's definitely something that's holding them back from winning outdoors, and it's going to be interesting if they start figuring it out by the end of the year or what happens in the future.
Yeah, it's just crazy to see, like, Marvin, I know he, I think he's either 31 or 32, so that may play a factor, but still, like, in outdoors, it was him and Tomac over the last, over 5 years or so. Like, since probably, 2015 or whenever Marvin moved up, it seemed like even in his rookie year in the 450 class, it was, like, him and Tomac going at it. And now both of them are, you know, just struggling to get up there in the top three and not consistently doing it really at all. But, yeah, with that whole KTM, like, yeah, Cooper's off. And if you go back and watch all the races, like, not like everyone's saying in the outdoors he's not as good or whatever. Like, he's not nearly as good, but he's always been up there in the outdoors. He's always been battling, like, MX and Nations, too. He's always was up there and looking really good. But, yeah, I was just really curious to see what's going on with the KTM. And also, like, what you said of having to kind of balance Supercross and Motocross, like, a lot of people don't realize that as well, because it has to be most of the year, you know, is all the focus is being put on Supercross. And then you get, what's it, like a 2-week break? Then you go into round one, normally I hang down there, but just it seems like just having those two and trying to balance those two has to be really hard. And how are you with dealing with both of that and kind of making a transition from Supercross and then quickly over the motocross, like bike setup wise and everything?
Yeah, dude, it's tough for sure, especially because in the United States, the focus is Supercross. Like, that championship definitely means more, in my opinion, than outdoors. And I think that's where more of the money is. So, like, I think a lot of the teams focus on that. And it is hard to, like you said, you have 2 weeks to switch everything over and whatnot. I think the teams have a little bit of advantage because they have extra bikes and extra suspension and all that, so they can kind of ride a little bit outdoors during the weeks of the later rounds of Supercross. But for me, it's tough for sure. Like, because I full-blown Supercross all the way till the end of the season, and then, like, I have 2 weeks to try to send suspension off, try to get everything ready, switch over to outdoors, get, like, I don't have the luxury to have extra bikes and suspension to be training outdoors at the same time, like, I'm still racing Supercross. So being a privateer makes it a little bit rough, and so that transition is definitely tough, and that's when I don't really do too many outdoors, so, like, lately, like, all I did was watch Google this year, but even that alone was tough, just to jump in the mid-season trying to go race outdoors and be prepared, not only physically, but, like, have bike prepared and everything else, because it's hard to practice when your bike, when you're riding tracks that aren't as rough or ruddy as what you're racing on. So it's definitely a challenge, but I think Supercross definitely is the main thing, and I think everyone focuses on that. So I honestly don't see anything going I don't see it going more towards outdoors at all anytime in the future. I think it's going to even swing more towards Supercross.
Yeah, and a lot of people talk about Europe versus the States here, and it's something that it's really hard to compare the two, because MXGP is like 17 rounds of just motocross, and plus the tracks are way different over there. So just even going from a U.S. track over to HGP tracks, like, really different for the riders. And then you can't compare them, because they're always on motocross. They have the whole year, they have their focus on that. And then, with, like, the factory riders, it's hard enough with them going over. Then I'm hearing a lot of them are still running, like, really stiff setup suspension-wise in the outdoors, and, like, when they go to MX and Nations compared to, like, their KTM teammates or whatever, like, they're just saying, like, how insanely different the setups are. Just how much stiffer everyone is here in the States compared to the guys over in Europe. But getting back to Supercross and Motocross, it has to be insanely hard on the factory riders. But, yeah, for the privateers, like, I think that's another thing that people don't realize. Like, I said that a lot in this episode, but they don't, is the privateers. Not like they have – you guys don't have the luxury of – you know, multiple bikes and just focusing all your time on that and having race mechanic, factory or practice bike mechanic and just all the options they have and everything.
Yeah, for sure. I totally agree. And like you said, comparing the US versus the MXGP, and I definitely think it's not really a fair comparison, because, like you said, they race outdoors only. They don't race Supercross. And like I said, I think the U.S. struggles in setup. I think we're overall too stiff, especially compared to the MXGP stuff. And a lot of that has to do with Supercross. I think we get so comfortable riding Supercross on stiff suspension that if we get on something that's soft enough that works, like, say, an MXGP setup, I don't think we're comfortable on it, because, like, we don't want a bottom, we don't want the bike to be wallowy or ride that low in the stroke, because we're so prone to being used to Supercross stuff that's stiff and holds up and doesn't bottom, and we get so comfortable with feeling that it's what we kind of thrive for on our outdoor setups. And I think it definitely holds us back as far as being competitive with the MXGP guys.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, I think it seems like that discussions always happening with people, and you always hear it on shows and everything. It's like, yeah, it's not a fair comparison, and I'm not even saying that because the the U.S. has been doing so bad lately in vaccinations. Like, I know a lot of guys are opting out because it's just an awkward time, too, and it kind of sounds like I'm making excuses, but in the MXGP, normally, like this year, it's different with it being in the middle of the season, which is really strange, but obviously with COVID, nothing's really going to plan or going normal, I should say. But, MX and Nations normally the week after their last round, so they're still, you know, going. They just have to work 1 week longer, where I think it's like a month, right, after the last U.S. outdoor?
Yeah, usually I think it is like a month, but I think this year is only like 2 weeks after. But it's definitely going to be a little bit different. It's still just traveling over there and just racing in a different country is tough. But it's going to be interesting who the U.S. sends this year, because I've just been hearing a lot of people just not wanting to go. So it's going to be interesting who wants to go and who's able to go and who's going to actually be sent over there.
And that's something I wanted to talk about last week in the episode, and we didn't get to it. And Joy and I were talking about it after, and we're like thinking, we're like, between the people that don't want to go and the people that that can't go, because it's like there's hardly anyone. Like, Stars can't go. Apparently, they're moving everything. Mm-hmm. So they couldn't go. Kawasaki isn't, apparently. They're not going. I'm not sure why, if it's COVID or what. I haven't heard. I'm not sure who else is not going. But if you just think about Cowie and Star, they're like a couple riders in there, like Martin, you can potentially say about going there. Martin, Cooper, like I would have him in my picks for MX the Nation. And then Kawasaki, you know, obviously got Tomac there, but even with AC, if he was healthy, just to have him going. But you take away those two teams, it's like, heck, who's going to go now?
Yeah, for sure. That makes it tough, because if Star's not going, like, that's honestly, like, that's, they have the best riders right now in the lights class. That's U.S.-based for sure. So if they're not going, like, who are you going to pick in the lights class to go? Like, you're going to have Hampshire, maybe. That's probably the next top U.S. guy. So are you going to pick Hampshire, Barsha, if he's healthy, and then one more U.S. guy that's not on a Kawasaki or a Star bike? So Sexton, it definitely makes it tough to pick a solid team if half the teams don't want to go or half the riders don't want to go.
Yeah, and it's a weird race, too, because everyone loves the race, but with it being, like, normally awkward timing, and then there's no money in the line or points in the line, too, it's, like, I don't know, it's just different. I feel like it doesn't have the energy of, like, if it was some huge points race or, like, the Las Vegas Supercross or you know, the last race in the Outdoor Championship or whatever. But it's cool to see people that are actually pumped and that are really wanting to go. And Chase has made it clear that he really wants to go and represent the U.S. out there. And I think he'd do really good. This year, it's been a little weird with him, because he's shown the speed for sure. But just, I don't know if it's bad luck or what, but he seems like he just hasn't been up front as much as I think everyone would think that he would be. But even in the times that he has been up front, he's been looking amazing, and you know, looked like he would be a good guy to send over.
Yeah, he definitely he's picked it up the last half of the season. So, like, at Washougal, he got the overall, and he rode really well there. And then even Unadilla, he rode really good. He was the only guy that had anything for Roxen, in my opinion. Like, I mean, AP had it the first moto until he fell, but on the second moto, like, Sexton really, like, latched onto Roxen, and he didn't let him go. So that was pretty impressive. I think he probably would have been a good, solid second overall if he didn't have that first turn crash in Moto 1. Like, I think he probably went 2-2, in my opinion. But, yeah, he would have been a good guy to take or send over there if they pick him. But then after that, like, it's going to be tough to pick another guy. Like, I think Barsha should be good too if he's healthy, like I said. And then 2BDF, like I said. That one's tough because most of the top USA guys are ride for the Star, and they don't want to send anyone over. So who would you pick on the 2BDF side?
I don't know. I'd have to go with Hampshire. It's just it's funny to go down the list. It's like, okay, they're not from the U.S. like the Hunter brothers or Hunter brothers. The Lawrence brothers are Australian, so you're like they're out. How about Martin and Cooper? Yep, they're on Star. It's like you go down the list, and it's like nothing's working, and then people switching teams. But for 250, I don't know. I would have to go with Hampshire. I feel like he's shown a lot of speed this year, a crazy amount of speed that, like, at Red Bull when he crashed, like, a million times, and he still caught up. I was kind of speechless at that point of not only him crashing that much, but he was still able to catch up the jet and be right there and not be too far out of it. And if he could just only stay up and not keep on crashing a million times, I think he would be a good pick.
I like you said, I totally agree. His speed's been really good. If he can work on his consistency a little bit and not fall or make the mistakes, like at Washougal, he was right up there too, and then he stalled it. So he dropped back, and then this last weekend he passed Cooper and ended up third in the second moto, so that was a solid ride. He's been riding well. He definitely deserves a spot on the team, I think, if he wants to go and if Husky will send him. But he's been impressive. I think next year he might be up there in the title hunt if he can just find a few little bit here and there to be a little bit more consistent, not crash and whatnot. But it's tough to be fast and push that edge and not make mistakes. So I think it's something that he's going to have to work on this offseason to really master.
Yeah, for sure. It seems like he's just pushing the limit right there and pretty much all season. It's like, if you can only clean up those mistakes and maybe even tone it back a little bit, but it's just really hard to because I'm just to see what he's doing wrong, I guess, and people are saying just, you know, clean up his mistakes, which is easier said than done, but, like, I don't know, the dude's absolutely hauling. If he can just, I guess, just keep it up and I don't know, just not crash. Like, he's capable of winning the title. And I was looking at the points. I'm not sure what they are right now. He's still obviously, like, really far back. I was looking last week, and I believe he was ahead of Martin by only a few points. Like, it might have been 17, but when you think that Martin was out for a few rounds, then you think about how fast and competitive Hampshire has been. I find it really crazy because they're both, like, out, like, around 50 points.
Yeah, that's insane that they're that far back. And they've been fast, and they've been up front most of the races. And like you said, Martin missed a few rounds, and that really hurt his points. But I think Hampshire DNF'd a moto. Yeah, he was winning a moto, the one that Swole won. He was winning that moto, and then broke a chain and DNF'd that one. So I think that's one reason why he's so far back, too, because, like, without that, he would have 26 more points, so he wouldn't be that far back. So I think those DNFs or not racing really messed Martin and him up on points. But it would be interesting how close he would be in points without that DNF, because he had that Moto 1. He had that Moto 1 at what round was that? Round, like, 3 or something like that? Yeah. The one that Swole won?
Yeah.
And I think he'd be up there in points for sure if that didn't happen.
Yeah, I totally forgot about that. It just slipped my mind with everything going on this season, but where is he? I thought I had the points. I guess I don't, but yeah, I think he's around 50 points. So I guess I'd put him like a moto finish out of the lead there. And we're talking last week about, like, the racing's really good in both classes this year. It's just really fun to watch. Besides last weekend, even though it was still pretty good racing with Plasminger being up there and Kenny killing it, but it's been really close. Points just so far separated, and even the 250 class, I have to pull up the points here. I'll look for them here, but they're so far separated, but, like, there's so many fast guys in the 250 class, not like it's a one or two man show. And then with the 450 class, with Dylan, just he's gone and left everyone back in the dust. I know Kenny has had a few issues this year, and like at Millville, and I think it was one other moto, I believe, but I can't think of it right now off the top of my head. But just to be like 50 some points ahead is ridiculous, and there's still 4 rounds to go, so there's last week we're talking, Joey and I were talking about, just we want it closer points wise, and you know, hopefully something gets closer where it comes down to the last round. But if it's looking the way it is right now, Dylan is looking like he's going to run away with it. You know, maybe even a round, at least a round early.
Yeah, I think Dylan definitely kind of has his hands on this one. Unless something happens and he has some bike issues or something like that, and like DNF some motos. As of right now, it looks like he definitely is running away with this one. But the 2DF class is still tight in points. It's pretty amazing. Like, I was super surprised that it took the first six rounds had six different winners. Like, that's crazy. Like, it's the first time that's ever happened. And it took till round seven with Martin to did at Washougal for the first repeat winner, which was very impressive. You know, like, that's unheard of to take till round seven to have a first repeat winner. So I thought that stat was pretty crazy, and it shows how deep that class is right now and how inconsistent they're being because of the depth of the class. The 450 class is deep as well, but I think with the experience there, definitely you see the cream rising to the top, like Ferrandis and Roxon and those guys. But the 2VDF class is, it's gnarly, and the 450 class, I think Ferrandis has this kind of under lock right now.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the results from Unadil, trying to pull up the points, so taking forever to get to it. But just looking down the list, it's insane because there's a couple of guys on there you think that deserve a factory ride. For example, Dylan Schwartz, he's on that the Suzuki team, the Bar-X team. And like, he has to have a factory ride. And you're looking, and you're like, where would you put him? The Stars pack. I don't even know where he'd go. Like, I'm trying to think of a team. But like every team you think of, it's like, seems like they're already loaded, and like there's no really place to put them.
Yeah, I agree. I think the only team that really I've a little disappointed on them cutting back is like KTM. Like, I'm surprised they only have one guy. You know, they only have Boland, so that's like, you would think they would have a little bit bigger roster. They only have a satellite team anymore since TLD went to GasGas. Because I think TLD has two guys in the 2DF class, and then Rockstar has three guys, I believe, or the Husky team has three guys. So I think KTM should add a couple guys, in my opinion. I mean, more rides the better, but yeah, like you said, there's not really a good spot for Schwartz, and he's killing it on that Suzuki team. And they got you there.
Yeah, I'm not sure what happened. It you cut out, and then just it went away.
Yeah, I don't know either. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah. But what were you talking about, Dylan Schwartz?
Yeah, I was saying even Dylan Schwartz on the Bar-X team was killing it. I think he went like first moto got like 15th, and then second moto I think got like 8th or something like that. So like, I think a top 10, that's impressive. And yeah, like Kamal Loretta's, he killed it. And then even like Levi Kitchen, he was impressive as well. I think he went 14-6 or 14-7, something like that, for 8th overall, something like that. And he was impressive. I think he's going to end up doing well, and he has a bright future along in front of him.
Yeah, the future is looking really bright for Moto, and it's crazy to believe that Levi Kitchen is 20 years old and that just turned 18 right now. So all the experience that Jet has under his belt of just Supercross and Motocross professionally, and then Levi's just getting started. But who knows? Like, I think we talked about this a lot. It's just like I'm always going back to that. But just like kind of these late bloomers that are coming up and that are really coming up and looking really good, like Justin Cooper, for example. Like, he wasn't that big of a threat like his whole amateur career. And then all of a sudden, I think it was like B-class. He came out of nowhere and just was like smoking all the guys. And then I'm not sure – they're too sure about Levi, but I don't remember hearing about him at all. Like, I always heard about Reynolds and like all the guys that turn pro right now, like Jalik and Styles and everyone. But they have a couple of these guys that are kind of coming up from, like, I don't know what they're doing before, but they're just coming out of nowhere.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've known Levi for a long time since he's a Northwest guy, but he's definitely, I think it was last year at Loretta's, he really showed what he was made of. I think he rode 2PD Limited and 4PD Limited at Loretta's and went and won all of his motos. And I think that's really where it turned around for him. And then Then this year he won both titles in the pro sport classes at Loretta's and is just killing it. So I think he's going to have a good future. And like you said, he is 20, so he's a little bit on the older side, but like, I don't see that as a bad thing. Like, careers are lasting pretty long nowadays. So I think, like, waiting a little bit till you are a little bit older and a little bit more mature, you're going to have more solid rookie seasons than, say, these 16-year-olds that are turning pro. They're going to be all over the place. So I think I don't think it's a bad thing. I think waiting a little bit is going to be beneficial at times. But, hey, like, Jet, I think he was ready at 16, and he showed that he came out and did well and won races at 17, and I think he, like you said, he just turned 18, I believe. So it's interesting to see the progression of these young kids like that, and some of the kids are waiting till they're a little bit older, and I don't know what's right or what's wrong. It's just it's good to see that they're waiting for the kids to show some maturity if needed before they just, because I think back in the day, they used to just throw them in at 16, and you saw these careers that lasted only a couple of years because they couldn't get a hang of it. So I think it's a little bit more beneficial that they're letting the kids mature a little bit more before they throw them in there and hopefully have longer careers as a result.
Yeah, it seems like a really tricky situation now. Like, back when Bubba turned pro, like, I believe he was really young. I'm not sure exactly how old, if he was 16 or what, but.
Yeah, I think he was 16.
Yeah, like him and a couple other guys back then were turning pro really young. Then it seems like lately, like the last 10 years, there hasn't been too many young riders turning pro besides, you know, like Jet in the last couple of years. But like before that, there wasn't too many riders coming or turning pro at a really young age. Like, it seems like most of them were waiting until 18 or even 19, 20. Where now, it's kind of weird. Like the last 2 years, I think it's been like Jet, and then we got Volin. Like, Volin has to be 18, 19. Is he even 18? He might even be 17. It seems like they really pushed him up. I heard KTM wanted him to turn pro, and it kind of, you know, pushed him up, and it was their decision on that. But it seems like he wasn't even in the – he wasn't in the A class for sure. I don't know if he was racing B, if he just went to schoolboy or what. But, yeah, he went up early, but it's looking like it's working out for him. But it's just a tricky situation because if you're super fast and looking like you're going to do really good in the pros and you turn pro at 16 and you make a couple mistakes or just have a bad season, who knows, you might lose an opportunity on a factory ride. Or if you wait like Levi did and then gain experience, you know, get more mature and everything, then you come out kind of more prepared and everything. But it's like, I don't know. It just seems like a really, very tricky situation.
No, I agree. It's definitely tricky because I don't know what the answer is. And then you have guys that turned pro early, like Bubba, and just killed it. And we all know his career was good. But you have other guys that turned pro early and they got a couple seasons in and like just didn't perform or got hurt or whatnot. And like once their 2 years of their contract was up, they never got re-signed by another team, and the industry just forgot about them, and they had to go get a normal job, which sucks because like they might have the potential to do better. But for the I think waiting until you're at least 18 to 20 might be a little bit better. I think you'll see a little bit longer careers because of that. Because let's say AC, he turned pro at 16 and killed it at the beginning. Like his first four rounds, he won Supercross and whatnot, which was awesome. But then he just had injury after injury, and he spent like the next 4 years hurt. And if it wasn't for him being as showing that speed early on, I don't know if he would ever had a ride. If that makes sense, like if he didn't show that early speed, and they would have just canned him after a couple of years, and he'd have been one of those statistics. But luckily, he showed that speed, and PC kept him on, and Cali kept him on, and they won a championship, and now he's top 450 guy. So it's definitely, I don't know, I think 16 is a little too young, but some riders are ready at 16, like the Lawrence brothers, I think, were. But I think in 18 to 20 is a little bit more realistic for your average person.
Yeah, it's crazy. You think, like, some guys are still racing, like, Monster Cup on a Super Mini at 16. And then you got guys like Jet turning pro at 16 and racing against the top guys in the 250 class. And it's, I don't know, it just seems like a hard situation. And there's just so many guys, and it seems like there's a lot of fast guys, which is a really good situation for Moto. And it seems like the sport's really growing, but there's a lot of fast guys going down to only a limited amount of rides available. Then you're seeing these guys that are doing their own gig and that really deserve factory rides, and then that are privateers. Then you see guys that are on satellite teams like Marchbanks. Like, you think he would be on some factory team, but he's on club, which is, don't get me wrong, club really has it going on, especially the last couple of years. But you'd still think he'd be on a factory team. But PC dropped him after that injury last year.
Yeah, for sure. There's just the sport's brutal. There's a lot more riders than rides right now, and it's I don't know what the answer is. It's tough for sure. And honestly, like, I don't think you'll never see more than 22 rides per class, because that's all we have in the main event, and no one's ever going to have you're not going to have a ride that you're not expected to make a main event. So I don't see there being more than 22 decent rides, and I think that's kind of where the cap is. And so it's going to be interesting the next few years when there's more riders than rides, and good riders than rides. So it's going to be definitely an interesting dynamic for sure.
Yeah, like, it's so cool to see it growing, but it's getting crazy. Like, to think about, like, we talked a little bit about it earlier on in the episode, but 15th, like, in 05, like I said, it seems like they're way faster. 15 nowadays is way faster than you go back, and the privateers started, like, way earlier in the results, like, maybe even top 10, but now there's factory guys in the 450 class that are, like, year 20th. And it's like, just to make a main event is crazy, then, and it just makes it that much harder in the privateers. And then to see what the AMA payout is crazy too, because, like, all you guys are going out, and the way they have the schedule for Supercross and Motocross, how you're all over the country, and it seems like they don't really make it easy on you guys, like, kind of going back and forth and all the way over the East Coast and jetting over all the way back to the West, and just all over the place. And it just seems like it's a really tough situation.
Yeah, for sure. They definitely like to make us drive a lot. But it's definitely tough. And like you said, the AMA payout's not great. And luckily, like, I'm able to do what I can do with, because I have a lot of good sponsors behind me. But it's a tough situation. And I don't know what the answer is to make the sport grow better, to grow everything. But it's going to be interesting what happens in the next few years to see if there is any growth or any more added money into the purse or into the sport in general. Luckily, I think
can you hear me? You cut out again. Okay, you're back now.
Oh, sorry about that. But I was saying, I think the energy drinks have saved the sport. They kept it going, and I think it's going to be interesting just to see what happens in the future with getting more money into the sport, because I think the sport needs it. I just don't know how it's going to happen, and hopefully it does happen.
Oh, for sure. And you think about it, like, Monster sponsors like almost every team. It seems like they're in Star, they're Kawasaki. 40 Kawasaki, and just, they're all over the place. And to think about all the money that they're spending being a title sponsor, they're not only the title sponsor of the Supercross series, but to be a title sponsor of every individual team that they are sponsoring is really cool to see. Then you got Rockstar, you know, with the Husky team and Red Bull and stuff, and yeah, they've definitely saved the moto industry. And I just hope there's more outside sponsors coming in. And I don't know what it is, but if there's a lot of moto fans out there, and the ratings aren't great, like, it's nothing like the NFL or NBA or anything, but if you compare it to another sport, like, I don't know, NASCAR probably gets more for sure, but Like, stuff than, like, other racing sports. You see more outside sponsors coming in, like, you know, like Geico and stuff, and that's a whole other thing to talk about with, but, like, I don't think Moto gets the respect and the sponsors it really deserves.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I don't know why. Like, I think for the bang for the buck, they get pretty good advertising out of the industry with Moto, and the demographics are really good for motocross. So I don't know why we don't attract more outside sponsors, because just from that standpoint, with the viewing and the demographics, it should be a pretty good advertising avenue for a lot of these people. But for some reason, some teams are able to get them in, like, say, HRC got some good outside sponsors in, but they only, like Jimmy John's, but they only stayed for, like, 2 years, and then they left. So I don't know if they weren't getting the bang for their buck or why, or just someone that loves Moto just stopped working for the company. But for some reason, we can get them in every once in a while, but getting them to stay has been tough, and I don't know the answer. I'm not a marketing genius, but you think with the demographics that we do have, it would be a pretty hit for a lot of these companies.
Yeah, and that's something I always wondered, like, just what's going on in the mind, like, one of the big wigs that, like, any big company, because it's really cool to see Twisted Tea stepping up, and they've done, like, great things this year. They're sponsored, I think, whatever it's called, the title sponsor, whatever you want to say, was it Red Bud? They did that. The official sponsor. I don't know what it is, but they sponsored that, and they're sponsoring that Suzuki team, the HEP team, and I was really hoping that they would stay. And I heard an interview with I forgot the guy's name there, but the guy that's in charge of all that, and he was really pumped about it though. So it kind of not necessarily surprised me, but I just found it really cool because, like you said, there's a lot of people that are coming in, like Jimmy Johns and stuff, but they're leaving after a couple of years. And it seems like, from what he's saying, he didn't know too much about it. And then once they got in and everything, they're just kind of blown away by what's here, you know, all the fans. And just, I think a lot of Moto fans are pretty loyal, too, when it comes to big-name sponsors like that that are supporting the teams. And, from what I heard from his interview, is like he's really digging it and really looking forward to stepping up and potentially being a sponsor in the Supercross series and doing more stuff with the outdoor championship as well, along with the HEP team, which I just was really pumped on. And you got Geico, and Geico was a sponsor of the Factory Connection Honda team for well over a decade, I think, right around. And to see them leave was really disappointing, and I don't know if it's something with COVID or what, but it's just it seems like they're really screwing them over, and hearing the owner of Geico or the team say kind of what happened, and it seems like they had someone lined up, but it was all last minute thing that kind of fell apart, and I don't think a lot of people realize, like, without them, you know, like, these teams really can't operate. Like, they obviously folded, and that really sucked because they had a lot of amateur riders that they had coming up. They had, like five guys. Now Honda only has two. That's just, you know, spots disappearing right there.
Yeah, for sure. Geico even was definitely a bummer. Like you said, I think they were there for, like, 10 or 12 years, and that's actually pretty long term for a big company in this sport, an outside company. And I don't know exactly what happened there. I can just only assume that they got a new marketing guy in, and he just wanted to go a different route than for marketing than the motorsports industry. So that's the only thing I can assume. I thought it was a good sponsoring motocross was a good advertising for them because of all the motorcycle insurance and stuff, and everyone drives a car, and Geico's huge. So you thought it would be good sport for them to sponsor, but apparently something happened and they pulled out. I don't know what happened. I'm not in it that much, but it's good to see, like you said, Twisted Tea to be happy and pumped on the progress that they're making in the sport with sponsorship, and I hope they do more in the future and hopefully you see other outside companies, like even if it is some other alcoholic company or anything, just get in the sport. Like, I mean, I'm a little biased, but it's the best sport in the world, in my opinion. And I think the more money we can get in it, the bigger we can grow it, and the better it can be. So hopefully we can get some outside sponsors in and grow the sport to where I think it should be.
Yeah, it should definitely be up there. I think a lot of people don't give it really the credit that the sport deserves, because like, where's our logo going to go? And then you're thinking, okay, it's going to go on the shroud. And they're probably like, well, how can you see that? You know, it's only a little area there. And that's the best spot on the bike. But when you think of it, like Geico, I know everyone has, you know, car insurance and stuff. But I know a lot of people that actually drop Geico that because the only reason they had it is because they actually sponsored Geico Honda. So I think a lot of people are loyal and you know, whatever it is, like a lot of people are really pumped about Twisted Tea, and it seems like whatever company steps up, the moto community really gets behind it and supports them as well for supporting the team. And yeah, like you said, like hopefully something kind of works out. Like, it's kind of cool with Kenny bringing the Art of Sport in. Hopefully one day that will work out for to be a bigger sponsor of like a team or something. But I don't know, like I feel like something, well, it should happen for sure. It deserves it. The ratings are up there to get something better, but yeah, I don't know if it's gonna come anytime soon though.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, I think moto fans are very loyal, and I think that's, I see that just in my personal sponsors, like just my fans, that they're loyal to me, and I can see them going after using stuff that my, using products that my sponsors that sponsor me. And I think that's awesome that the motocross fans are that loyal. And I think I wish more companies just saw that, because I think it's definitely a important trait that the motocross industry has.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, hopefully something happens. It's gonna be weird. Everything with that Peacock TV deal, I don't know how that's gonna work out. I heard they're not, it's not a sure thing for next year, since I think NBC Sports Network will be no longer going with everything on Peacock, and it made it sound like there's not gonna be Supercross on Peacock, or you know, both Supercross and Outdoors on Peacock. So even if there was, it's a streaming platform, not like it's on regular cable TV too. So really curious to see how that's going to go. And it kind of blew me away, but like every once in a while you see a race on primetime TV, like, like Supercross, let's say. But what I heard, it's just harder to schedule a 4-hour thing for Outdoors on NBC. But then you're seeing these other sports, it's like, I don't even know what an example is, like some dinky sports you get on ESPN or you see it on CBS, and it's like, it's so crazy that moto can't get up there, and especially Supercross, because I feel like Supercross is, like, everyone's watching Supercross, like, not that many people, well, compared to Supercross, not that many people are watching the Outdoors consistently, but you think it'd be up there on national TV more, like in the main channel. Yeah, but hopefully something works out with NBC, or it doesn't, you know, fold or whatever and turn into just Peacock.
Yeah, for sure. I actually enjoyed the Peacock deal. I think it's kind of cool to be able to watch it whenever I can and be able to know it's on instead of trying to flip it through the channels. But yeah, hopefully they can figure something out and get more eyes on the show, because I think that's what's important is viewers, and hopefully we can get more.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I liked it because it kind of made me get it, because I'm a huge Office fan. They dropped off Netflix, and I saw both Supercross and Moto coming on, and I was kind of disappointed, but I'm like, I already have it. But yeah, going back, like, it's really cool to see just all the races. Unfortunately, you can't go back to all the stuff that was on that NBC Sports Gold or whatever it's called past. They had going on there for a few years. But you can go back to all the previous motos to, I think, A1 last year. So you can go back and see all that, and they have highlights and everything on there. And it seems like everything's trending that way TV-wise as well. But, yeah, you know, I hope something happens. Seems like it's growing at a pretty good rate. And Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, for sure. But,
anyways, what do you got going on now? I saw that you raced Washougal. That was your last race, right? Outdoor race.
Yeah, I just did Washougal. It's probably the only one I'm going to do outdoor round. And then, honestly, I just pretty much come up and race local Pacific Northwest races and try to make a little bit of money doing those. And then pretty much start putting a program together for 2020 Outdoors and – or not Outdoors, 2020 Supercross. And then start training for that. And I'm excited to have a little bit more of a normal schedule for 2020 – or 2022, not 2020, my bad. So I'm excited to have a little bit more of a normal schedule. And my plan is to do 250 West and selected 450 East rounds and just go hit it hard and try to be a top 15, top 10 250F guy. Like, that's my goal, and we're going to train hard to try to get there.
It has to be a lot easier for all you guys out West, and there's a lot of guys out West that are – and just to have all the rounds in California, like, who knows, fingers crossed. I know a lot of things are still going down right now. That has the FIM really, or not the FIM, but Feld really stressed out. But, you know, everything with COVID's kind of unpredictable at this point. But everything out west, like California, I think they have like what, like four rounds? I heard Anaheim's having three rounds now. Like,
I'm not sure. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure. I'd have to look at the schedule.
Yeah, so if they have three, then they probably have like Oakland, San Diego, and yeah, that would probably be a lot easier for you guys in the West Coast. But how are you liking the those races where going back to back, like that? What was it, like Saturday, Tuesday?
Yeah, I like the Saturday, Tuesday races. I think it was cool. It just sucked because they were all on the East Coast, basically, you know. So like, I had to live in a hotel for 15 days straight. So that's only bummer. So I wouldn't be opposed of having Tuesday races on more of a normal schedule. So like Anaheim on Tuesday as well, you know what I mean? So I kind of liked them, but the normal schedule also works well. I just wasn't a fan of having to go stay in a hotel back east for 15 days at a time and just go to the next city and do the same thing. So, but as for Tuesday races, I enjoyed them. I think they were beneficial, and I think it was kind of cool to have a race on Tuesday.
Yeah, I really liked it as a fan, just having something to come home to, work, a long day of work, come home, and you got Supercross. Like, it seemed like you watched Supercross on Saturday night. That's the way to go, and it seemed really cool. I was always wondering how it was on the riders. Like, how was that training-wise, and then also riding throughout the week? Like, was there areas where you can actually go out and ride during the week, or were you just like, especially the Saturday, the Tuesday ones, where you just kind of only riding on like just the practices on race day and everything?
I pretty much just rode on the race days, just because it was hard to find a Supercross track back east that I could ride at, you know. Like, a lot of them were private and whatnot, so it's just pretty much just rode on the race days. Like, I just rode Saturdays and Tuesdays, and then from Saturday to Tuesday, there's not many days to ride, really, because you have like a rest day, bike prep day, and then it's Tuesday again. But you could probably ride a little, like, on a Friday or a Thursday between Tuesday and Saturday. It was hard to find a track to ride at, so I rode maybe a couple times during the season, but other than that, I was just pretty much racing every week. Just race days.
Yeah, that was something I really didn't even think about when it was happening 2 months, and I was hearing riders talk about it. It's like, it seemed like hard enough for the factory guys that have guys working on their bikes, but for all the privateer dudes, like, really a lot of respect for what you guys were doing, just making it out to the rounds and then and getting everything ready and then and trying to, you know, stay on top of everything too. It seemed like a big hassle, but and hopefully this year we won't have the, like, I know for sure, well, not for sure, but the schedule's out and it's not looking like it's going to be some crazy lineup like last year, but, you know, just some sort of normal, I guess, getting back to that, which I don't know if we're going to get back to that now, but and hopefully we'll get there.
Yeah, for sure. Let's hope more normal than not.
Sweet. Well, that pretty much wraps up everything. Oh, actually, before we end it, normally we make our predictions for the next round, and mm-hmm. me and Tom have been absolutely doing horrible. And then Joey last week, he got one right, I think. I had a paper in front of me somewhere, but he got one right. But we're talking about just how crazy it was to make our picks, everyone, like the top three, can switch them up, and it still looks like it could, like really be a potential thing. But yeah, I did horrible. I got nothing. But wanting to do our top three picks going into Bud's Creek to wrap up the show here. And if you want to start with the 250s, I'll get into that and see how this turns out.
Yeah, I'm thinking. Do you want to go Martin, Jet, Cooper for 250F class?
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
And then 450 class, I think Frandis is going to turn it around. I think Frandis is going to win Tomac, and then we'll put Rocks in at third.
Solid. So, whenever I'm thinking, I don't know, I think too hard about this. Martin, he comes back. He looked a little off even, but I think he's gonna come back swinging again. Same pitch, but I'll switch it up. I'll do the star guys up front again, but I'll do Cooper up front, getting the W, followed by Martin, then Jet in third, and the 450. Bud's Creek, it's hard to go away from Frandis. Frandis, Roxon, and I guess Tomac to round up the top three. I guess I'll go with that. Probably horrible. Every week I talk about horrible our picks are, I still do horrible each week. So, yeah, hopefully it gets better. And thank you so much for hopping on here. And been following you, and I've been a fan since I think it was the Barn Pro days when you joined Barn Pros and Viral Goggles there when that thing got kicked off, and they're always a help. Viral's been with us basically from the beginning. We started this page back in 2014, I believe, and back when we were a tiny little page, and Viral was awesome to us. They treated us awesome, and we had our fantasy going and everything, and so I was following you and the Barn Pro days, and thank you so much for hopping on.
Awesome, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in to episode 25 of the Moto 247 show. If you want to find us on Instagram, you can find us there at moto.247. That's our main page on there. Then our podcast page on there is at the Moto 247 show. Then our link in our bio, I think, is to our YouTube on our podcast page, which I highly recommend you go to and subscribe. I would definitely appreciate it if you did. I'm trying to hit that 1K mark, and we're definitely a ways away from it, but really hoping we get that soon. And then our link to our bio and our main page is to our website, where we keep on adding stuff, and definitely plan on having a lot more stuff added to our website soon and coming into 2022. So definitely check that out, and if you do, I definitely appreciate it. And thank you guys, like I said, for tuning into this episode, and stay tuned for our future episodes. Peace out, guys. Hey, what's happening, guys? It's Ezra here at Moto247, and welcome to episode 26 of the Moto247 show. Today's guest is Travis Hardcastle. You may have seen him on ESPN The Ocho as he raced pit bikes with Travis Pastrana, Kevin Windham, and the whole Nitro Circus gang as they went to TB's house. I know they went to Windham's house, and I think they went somewhere else as they had this huge pit bike championship that seemed pretty badass. It was really entertaining, and the tracks were really gnarly as well. And, hope you guys like this. Are you ready? It's showtime. Hey, what's happening, everyone? It's Ezra here, Moto247, bringing episode 26 to you from this Moto247 podcast studio here. It is absolutely a heater here, and let's see if I make it through tonight. But anyways, today's guest is Travis Hardcastle. You may have seen him on ESPN, The Ocho, as he raced pit bikes with Travis Pastrana, Kevin Windham, And the whole Nitro Circus gang, as they went from TP's house to Kevin Windup's house, and I think they went to one other place to have this crazy pit bike race, or this pit bike championship, I should say. It was really entertaining to see the least. I saw one race they had. I think it was at Windham's house. It was pretty crazy. The jumps were really gnarly and everything. And this one should be a good one. Thank you guys so much for tuning in, and enjoy.